Chapter 16. "Hart has got himself into a mess out there," General Sir Redvers Buller's voice matched the pompous jut of his belly, and he leaned back against the weight of the telescope he held to his eye. "What do you think, Courtney?"
"Well, he certainly hasn't reached the drift, sir. It looks to me as though he's been pinned down in the loop of the river,"
Gary agreed.
"Damn the man, my orders were clear," growled Buller.
"What can you make of the guns? Can you see anything there?"
Every telescope in the party of officers swiveled back to the centre, to where the corrugated iron roofs of Colenso showed above the thorn trees, dimly through the dust and the smoke.
"I can't..."
Gary started, then jumped uncontrollably, as the Naval 4.7 bellowed from its emplacement beside them. Every time that morning it had fired, Gary had jumped. "If only I knew when it was going to," he thought, and jumped again as it bellowed.
"They are not being served," one of the other staff officers interposed, and Gary envied him his composure and his calmness of voice. His own hands were trembling, so that he must grip hard with both hands to keep his binoculars focused on the town. Each time the naval gun fired, the dust of its recoil drifted over them. Also, the sun was fierce, and he was thirsty. He thought of the flask in his saddlebags, and the next bellow of the gun caught him completely off guard. This time both his feet left the ground.
"Do you agree, Courtney?"
Buller's voice. He had not heard the beginning of the question.
"I do indeed, sir."
"Good."
The general turned to his ADC.
"Send a rider to Hart. Tell him to pull out of there before he gets badly mauled. Quick as you can, Cleary."
At that moment, Gary made a remarkable discovery. Behind the inscrutable mask of his face, with its magnificent silver moustache, behind the bulging, expressionless eyes, General Sir Redvers Buller was every bit as agitated and uncertain as was Gary Courtney. His continual appeals to Gary for support confirmed this. Of course, Gary did not consider that another reason why Buller addressed his appeals to him rather than the regular officers of his staff was because this was the one quarter from which Buller could rely on unquestioning support.
"That takes care of the left flank."
Buller was clearly relieved at his decision as he searched out towards the right, fixing the low, round bulk of Hlangwani Kopi in the field of his telescope.
"Dundonald seems to be keeping this end up."
Earlier there had been desultory rifle and pom-pom fire from the right flank. Now it was silent.
"But the centre!"
As though he had been delaying the moment, Buller at last turned his attention on the holocaust of dust and flame and shrapnel that enveloped Colenso.
"Come along,"
he snapped the telescope closed. "We better have a closer look at what they've accomplished there." And he led his staff back to the horses. Careful that no one should usurp his place at the general's right hand, Gary limped along beside him. At the headquarters of Littleton's brigade, established in a deep donga, half a mile before the first scattered buildings of the town, it took Buller half a minute to find out what had been accomplished. It appalled him.
"We hold the town, sir, and three companies have advanced to the road bridge and seized it. But we cannot hope to hold it. I have sent a runner ordering them to withdraw on the town. But why aren't the guns firing? What's happened to Colonel Long?"
"The guns have been silenced. Long is badly wounded."
While Buller sat his horse, slowly absorbing this, a sergeant of the Transvaal Staats Artillery jerked the lanyard of his quick-firing Nordenfelt and fired the shell which changed a British reverse into a resounding defeat that would echo around the world. From out of the broken and rocky complex of hills on the north bank, the shell arched upwards, over the river with its surface churned to brown by shrapnel and short shell and blood, high over the deserted guns manned only by corpses, shrieking over the heads of the surviving gunners as they crouched in the rear with their wounded, forcing them to duck as they had ducked 1,000 times before, plunging in its descent over the town of Colenso where weary men waited, down across thorn tree and mimosa and brown grass felt littered with dead men, falling at last in a tall jump of dust and smoke in the midst of General Buller's staff. Beneath him, Gary's horse dropped, killed instantly, pinning his leg so that it had been flesh and bone, not carved oak, it would have been crushed. He felt the blood soaking through his tunic and splattered in his face and mouth.
"I've been hit! Help me! God help me! I'm wounded!"
And he writhed and struggled in the grass, wiping the blood on his face. Rough hands freed his leg and dragged him clear of his horse.
Not your blood. You're all right. It's not your blood. It's his.
On his hands and knees, Gary stared in horror at the Surgeon Major, who had stood beside him, and who had shielded him from the blast. Shrapnel had cut his head away, and the blood still spouted from his neck as though it were a severed hose. Around him men fought their panic-stricken horses as they reared and whinnied. Buller was doubled up in the saddle, clutching the side of his chest.
"Sir, sir, are you all right?"
An ADC had the reins and was bringing Buller's horse under control. Two officers ran to Buller and helped him down. He stood between them, his face contorted with pain, and his voice, when he spoke, was shaky but hoarse.
"Disengage, Littleton, disengage on your whole front!"
"Sir," protested the brigadier, "we hold the town. Let me cover the guns until nightfall, when we can retrieve them at our—"
"Damn you, Littleton, you heard me. Pull your brigade back immediately. The attack has failed."
Buller's breathing wheezed in his throat, and he still clutched the side of his chest with both hands.
"To withdraw now will mean accepting heavier losses than we have suffered already. The enemy artillery is accurately ranged. Pull them out! Do you hear me?"
Buller's voice rose to a shout.
"The guns!" Littleton tried again,
but Buller had already turned to his ADC.
"Send riders to Lord Dundonald's brigade. He must retire immediately. I give him no latitude of discretion. He is to disengage his force at once and withdraw. Tell him the attack has failed on left and centre. Tell him the guns are lost and he is in danger of being surrounded. Go, ride fast."
There was a murmur among them, horrified as they listened to these orders. Miserably every eye turned to Littleton. Silently they pleaded with him, for he was the senior officer present.
"General Buller,"
he spoke softly, but with an urgency that caught even Buller's shell-shocked attention.
"At least let me try to recover the guns. We cannot abandon them. Let me call for volunteers."
"I'll go, sir. Please let me try,"
a young subaltern elbowed Gary aside in his eagerness. Gary knew who he was. All of them did. For apart from being one of the most promising and popular youngsters in Buller's command, he was also the only son of the legendary Lord Roberts. Assisted by his ADC, Buller moved to the shade of a mimosa tree and sank down heavily with his back against the rough bark of the trunk. He looked up at young Roberts, dully, without apparent interest.
"All right, Bobby. Littleton will give you your men. Off you go, then."
He pronounced the sentence of death upon him, and Roberts laughed excitedly, gaily, and ran to his horse.
"I think we are all in need of refreshment. Will you join me in a sandwich and a glass of champagne, gentlemen?"
Buller nodded to his ADC, who hurried to bring food and drink from his saddlebags. A stray shell burst 20 yards away, scattering clods of earth over them. Stolidly, Buller brushed a piece of dry grass from his whiskers and selected a smoked salmon sandwich.